happy Sunday, though I guess unless you're listening to this to the day we released it, it might not be Sunday. So I'm 99% sure. Yeah, who knows what day of the week it is. So we're back with another mini episode of Tour Guide Tell All to chat about a new memorial in DC. Can we call it a new memorial if it's not officially been dedicated yet?
Yes.
A memorial under construction, soon to be. Ooh, I like that. Memorial in waiting.
I think considering how long we've been talking about this memorial coming to life at this point, we might as well say a new memorial because, it's been a journey.
No.
That is very true. So now, if you are not a patron already, you wouldn't know this, but we are recording this as a video as well, where we get to share some of the historic images and you get to watch us talk. And we'll share some footage of the Eisenhower Memorial taken today because Dan can walk there. So if you want to join us on a sneak peek of the Eisenhower Memorial, subscribe to our Patreon page, Tour Guide Tell All. But if you just want to listen, here is Dan, who has been suppressing all of his comments about the Eisenhower Memorial for this very moment.
And as angry as Dan is, I do hope we at least can get to why it got to the point it got to. The drama to bring this memorial to life, it is insane. I think it may win the award for most insane journey from idea to completion.
Oh my gosh, I'm so ready.
But I'll let Dan bring us.
I'm ready.
Well, so I'll start with the architects. And I'm actually going to give it to you, Becca, to like go through the drama because it's, I can't even wrap my head about it. So first of all, let's introduce the architect, Frank Gehry, who is very famous. And I don't hate. I just think Frank Gehry has a context. And sometimes his contexts work really well, particularly art museums. Of course, his most famous works are the Guggenheim and Bilbao and New York and other contexts around art. He is a very good architect. If you've never seen any of his work, think of the Disney Symphony in LA, usually very described as very modernist, very organic, very bulbous, very shapely, very twisted. And again, sometimes this work, if you look up some of his works, his earlier work, like there are some things I do like. The Gehry Tower in Hanover is sort of a cool thing where it looks like someone has just a normal box tower and then twisted it and sort of left the base at one point and twisted the top of it. I don't hate him as much as Robert Venturi, who we could talk about in another one. But
I think one thing to mention though, Dan, before you jump, I'll get into it a little more with the architect, but that whether you love or hate his work, he's a very prolific, iconic American architect. And at this point in his life, he's in his 80s, right? He's towards the end of his working career, and he does not have a single building in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. He has never bid or won a bid for a building in Washington, D.C., which seems sort of strange to have this very famous American architect not have a building in D.C., not have anything. And then all of a sudden, he is going to do the Eisenhower Memorial.
And that is certainly a huge part of the drama that sort of goes with this whole thing. Because it did seem to a lot of people that this was sort of a forced, like round peg in a square hole type of situation. And when you look at some of his first designs, that's when I really was like, oh my God, no, please no. And many other Americans and many other people in Congress were also like, oh gosh, please no. And the Eisenhower family were like, oh gosh, please no. So it has evolved over time. And it is the built one that is today is certainly a lot more, I guess, conservative than some of his first drafts or first attempts at it. But it's still really strange. And I today, and we'll pop up the video in a bit, but it's still behind some barricades, so I couldn't quite walk through it and really experience it. And that may change things as well when you're like in the space. But from the outside, it just looks very strange. And probably the weirdest part is this. First of all, it's surrounded by, should we describe it? Or
I would say let's pause on descriptions first. So a little bit of context. on this memorial. So making a memorial is not like, you know, we don't have a set necessary procedure for how that goes, but typically you need two things to happen. You need government action. You need Congress to say with legislation, this is going to be our national memorial and we're going to put it on federal land and we're going to take federal money to maintain and operate this memorial in perpetuity. And what you typically then have is a private entity, a foundation, a commission, some sort of private group that's going to raise the initial funds, is going to lobby, is going to take care of all the logistics. And the Eisenhower Memorial sort of comes about really with a drive from Congress. There are World War II veterans, senators, and Congress who really want to see a memorial to Eisenhower. And it's a very bipartisan piece of legislation. Eisenhower is, you know, this beloved figure in World War II history, the Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces. He's a very popular two-term president.
I was also going to jump in and say, he's probably the last president that will get sort of bipartisan support for a memorial. Yes. Democrats like him for, you know, big government things like the Department of Education and NASA and the interstate system. We love all that stuff. And of course, he is a Republican. So that side of the aisle came on. So this was sort of a cool thing in D.C. at first to like see both sides of the aisle say, yes, we need an Ike memorial.
So imagine like 1999, you've got Congress saying, yes, you get a commission. This commission has congressmen. It has Eisenhower's grandson, David, from Camp David. He's the one that Eisenhower named Camp David for. He's on this commission. You have important members of the military, the lobbying communities, and it's like, we're going to build this memorial. And that was the idea. And then through this competition, but a competition that wasn't really a competition because everybody was sort of pushing for Geary, you get this really, really unique, unusual architect, this modern architect. And Geary puts forward an initial proposal that almost the entire commission says yes to, the basic concept of. They're all like, it's great, it's beautiful. At one point, one of the senators says, this is going to be the most visited memorial in Washington, D.C. People are going to come from all around the world to see this. And then Susan Eisenhower gets involved. She's one of Eisenhower's granddaughters. She is not on the commission, but she starts to, on behalf of the family, really start to raise some objections. In addition to this, there's a group that is kind of a small but powerful lobbying group that lobbies for very classical, traditional memorial styles, and they raise objections, not just to Geary, to the sculptors he wants to use, to all sorts of aspects of the design. And they start fighting this commission and they start building a really powerful campaign. While this is happening, the commission is starting to disintegrate. They're bleeding through money. In 2015, the Washingtonian did a deep dive into their spending. They found that they had spent $1.4 million to hire a fundraising consultant. That consultant got them $400,000 in donations. And one donation was $300,000 from one person.
That doesn't seem a good value.
No, the commission was not spending its own money. Unlike many other memorials that have been built, a bulk of this money was government funding. It got so bad in 2015, Congress threatened to pull the plug on this and actually pull any more funding if the commission couldn't get it together and if Geary could not get the design to be something that everyone could agree upon. So when we think about memorials like the FDR that took, you know, something like 47 years to be built and went through three architects, we look like something like World War II with all this fight over the location. This isn't unusual, but to me, the Eisenhower Memorial is so fascinating because you had the commission sort of just with the influence of one or two voices go from overwhelmingly supporting the initial design to it basically falling apart. It was supposed to be dedicated in 2015. That's when it was supposed to be dedicated, the 70th anniversary of the end of the war. Yeah, that's right. I'm good at math, right? 2015, 70th anniversary. And at that point, Congress was threatening to pull the plug on the project. So that's how much drama had led up to what we now see today. So I think when Dan's talking about the memorial, we have to keep in mind that what they've been settled up on is sort of a compromise of a compromise of a compromise to just desperately keep Congress's money to get this memorial done.
And again, I am trying to reserve judgment until I can sort of like walk through it and experience it as the architect intended for us to experience it. But my visit today, it feels exactly like you describe it, Becca. It feels like a compromise of a compromise of a compromise. And some of the elements that were described, I'm just not sure they work in real life. And this is sort of my complaint with a lot of modern, super modernist architects, is that it is very much form over function. And I like that to a degree, but with the Presidential Memorial, I'm not sure it's the best idea. So first of all, the site selection, it's a little bit odd. It's slightly off the mall.
I'll jump in though. I actually like the site selection, and I'll tell you an objection that I think is silly. But I actually like the location.
The location's interesting. It's not on the mall, but it's certainly close by. It is basically what we might consider the backside of the Air and Space Museum downtown. So the front side being the one that sort of faces the Washington Monument. This is across the street, across from Independence Avenue on that side. So a little bit of controversy there, because there was a really cool community garden. It was sort of a weird cut through space, sort of a triangular space, because a road sort of cut through this long block at a diagonal. I think that was Maryland Avenue. Maryland Avenue. So according to the original L'Enfant plan, Maryland Avenue going right up to the Capitol, but it's been cut and chopped many times over by buildings like this.
So that was one of the objections. So the thing is that if we're going to continue to build national memorials, the reality is they're not going to be on the National Mall. Right. Mall has only so much space. We want to try to maintain the green space that exists there. So for future memorials, we're going to have to be more creative. And so I appreciate them looking at maybe a space that could be utilized, having this memorial near these department buildings that were created during the Eisenhower administration, to have them across from Air and Space, I think is very timely. But one of the first big complaints when Congress announces that they're going to select this piece of land, a local activist wrote an 11-page diatribe against the location because of L'Enfant's original plan. And he said that the federal government would be destroying this beautiful vista of Maryland Avenue that mirrors Pennsylvania, which, sure, except we've already ruined that vista by chopping it up. Nobody drives Maryland Avenue the way you do Pennsylvania. It's mostly short-term parking. The city had converted a lot of that into street parking. So this idea that this was some grand thoroughfare that locals were enjoying motoring on every day, I thought was a little ridiculous.
Yeah. And I tend to agree with that too. I totally agree on not every memorial needs to be on the mall. And actually, I thought this was a pretty clever use of some underutilized space. And I do like the connections to Eisenhower. It wasn't just random, like, oh, let's find a empty block in the city and just drop it there. He was integral for the space race in this country, for setting that up. He is integral to the creation of NASA and the Department of Education. And those are the buildings that sort of surround this site. I will say that I think that guy's letter, I can't remember if it was him or other people complaining about at least one of his original designs, really did block out the view of the Capitol. And that is one thing that they work to address in the revision. So I didn't get to today. I don't think I got a shot of it because it was too much fencing down there. But you are basically, you can follow the path of what used to be Maryland Avenue and then see the Capitol straight in front of you as you're sort of cutting a diagonal through the memorial. So again, that part I sort of liked. I do appreciate the site selection. Then it comes to these bizarre, columns, sort of weird.
Susan Eisenhower called them missile silos in one kind of complaint against. There were supposed to be, I think, more of them than they were.
Yes.
But yeah, I can't believe they kept those ultimately, but they hold up the tapestry. Is that correct?
Yes. And that was sort of what I was alluding to, that some elements that maybe work in a description, in a paper description, don't necessarily work in real life. So as far as I can remember, the original design did have many of these columns, basically enclosing the entire place. And if you look at some of those first designs, It feels very, I don't know. I'm going to say something wildly inappropriate, but it feels almost like a makeshift prison camp. Like
there were actually comparisons in his original design to concentration camps, because people would naturally be thinking of the World War II era or even to 9/11, to sort of, so I think whatever Geary was going for in that original design, a lot of people took it to this, I think, a very different place.
Yeah. I agree. So in the revision and what's standing now, it looks like they have just four pillars that are on the corners. And the ones that are south, on the south side, so directly abutting the Department of Education, that's what holds up. Let me see if I can get the description. A semi-transparent metallic mesh tapestry that would show images of Ike's childhood. Like, that was the written description. I did try to take some pictures and some close-ups of it today. I don't think it works. I don't think you can tell what the design is. It's very, first of all, it's very abstract. You really have to look at it, and it is semi-transparent, so you see the Department of Education behind it, and then there's sort of these weird squiggles that I guess are supposed to be trees that sort of look like the landscape that I grew up in. It's very odd, and I think my initial hatred of this was because there was supposed to be another one of these metallic meshes on the other side as well, sort of enclosing in the space, and that just seemed awful. This one sort of works to separate the space from the Department of Education, which is 10 feet away. Like it's very close to the Department of Ed there. And then there are two.
One thing I'll say about the tapestry, just because I think it's a really weird detail, and I wonder if this is why it doesn't quite work, is one of the complaints that came up was the environmental impact and what would happen to the birds. So they had to make the tapestry bird safe. So it is bird certified. And so it has to be a particular amount of transparency, but not so transparent that they'll fly into it. So this came up a couple years into this process, and they wanted to make it bird safe. So I feel like that must have impacted that in some way, but weird tidbit that they were so concerned that these birds were going to fly into it. Like, do you think when they were building the Lincoln Memorial, they were like, what about the birds?
Now that I think about it, like, it's huge. It's 80 feet tall. I maybe forgot.
So it's metal, but it's a tapestry.
It's a woven metal. It's sort of...
They do say, too, it'll be illuminated at night and that it'll be best viewed at night. So I wonder, too, if it's a matter of maybe with the lighting, whatever imagery is on there will be more distinct. But as a tour guide, I like memorials that work day or night, not one or the other, because sometimes you can't control when you might take a group to the memorial. So it needs to work in the daytime and it needs to work in the nighttime because people visit at all times of day.
We are, Memorials by Moonlight tour, where I think we do a really good job of highlighting the ones that look very different at night and also work during the day. Like there's not like, oh, this is the best time to come see this. It's just different. It's different to see the Lincoln Memorial at night than it is during the day, but they're both fantastic. And I sort of worry about that too, Becca, about like this having a like, oh no, you need to come here at night in order to experience it. I will say I didn't see any fountains, so I'm sort of happy about that. I am glad when we move away from fountains. We will do another deep dive on a mini episode for the Veterans Disabled for Life Memorial, which is an awesome concept and uses water and is never turned on for about 8 months, 9 months out of the year. So I'm glad Geary didn't sort of go into the flowing fountains and water everywhere. So that's the background. If you're coming across the street from the Air and Space Museum, you see 80 feet tall. So it's basically matches the Air and Space Museum in terms of height across the street, which also to me is very weird. And then at the center of this pretty big space, I mean, it has the same square footage, obviously not different floors or anything, but it's about the same square footage as the Air and Space Museum. I mean, it's a long block. Maybe it's a little bit smaller than that, but still, it's
a wall. Seem like a really large space. Like when they were building it, you know, you could, when you drive by, you'd see, and it's like, wow, it's taking up a lot of real estate right there.
Yeah. And then there are sculptures that are sort of the story that they want to tell. And the sculptures are interesting. I was trying to like zoom in through construction fence. They were very nice. They had like cut holes, so because they knew people were going to come by and take pictures. And I believe one of the sculpture groups is Ike at D-Day. So he's sort of talking to his various generals and things like that. Again, sort of speaking, because this is sort of behind the scenes tour guide view of these types of memorials. I think that one of the things that they had very serious conversations about was how high to put the statues and whether or not it would be appropriate for people to like climb in there and take pictures. So I think that there were serious discussions with these statues about how high off the ground to place them so that people would get the visual cue that no, this is not something that you should climb up on. And looking at the pictures, I'm not sure if they got it right. It looks a little too low.
Of conversations, the National Park Service team had kind of telling guides a little bit about what was going to be happening here. They said that it would be very accessible and great for kids. So it sounds, when they talked about the positioning of the statue, so I don't know if the idea is that it'll just be a good height that you can get good pictures, or if they just sort of accept the reality that unless you do something like Lincoln, where you're up on this big pedestal and he's blocked off, people are going to inevitably get close and take photos. And maybe that's just how people experience memorials.
But I remember, I couldn't remember what the result of that conversation is. And maybe they went the other way and they're like, nope, we want people to climb around.
My question, Dan, is did they have the barefoot boy statue, the sculpture?
So I couldn't see it or find it. I was like trying to zoom.
For our viewers, our listeners, the initial concept Gary had actually only had one statue in the entire design. Ike's story was going to be told by the tapestries. The only statue they were going to have of him was young Ike on the prairie, sitting down barefoot, a boy full of dreams, which I actually think could be a nice way to approach a presidential memorial, especially maybe then launching into where that person goes. But naturally, a lot of people on this commission, men who had been in the military, men who served in the war, are looking at this and they're like, where's Eisenhower in the uniform? Where's Eisenhower at the Oval Office at the desk? Like, this is crazy. We can't just have this barefoot kid. People aren't going to know. They're not going to understand. So that was such a point of contention in the design. So I think it's a nice compromise to maybe have multiple statues showing multiple periods of his life. But I'm just curious whether they kept sweet little barefoot Eisenhower.
And then surprisingly, I mean, I do like the fact that they did move away from the tapestry telling Ike's story, which I don't think would have been very effective, especially 80 feet tall and trying to understand abstractly what the story is trying to tell you. And I think we have told stories successfully through statues, like the FDR Memorial, I think is a great example of telling his story through a series of different statues. And I think that can work here, but yeah, I remember that big controversy about, and I sort of saw both sides. I mean, the people advocating for that was like, he is the ultimate American dream. He is this nobody from nowhere, that rose to save the world and become president of the United States. And that is a beautiful, awesome, truly American story. But there's more to that story than just a barefoot boy sitting alone on a bench someplace. And then the other thing that is honestly very odd that I found was there's a lot of green space. I'd say like half the block is grass, which we see at World War II does not work. It never works. There's too many people walking on it. It's too artificial. They replant and resod and reseed every 5 minutes and it just gets trampled. So, and I will say, and especially for tour guides, we will all love this, there did seem to be dozens of benches, which is really nice because none of our memorials, except for maybe World War II, really offers enough places to sit. And especially we have a lot of older folks who want to see these things.
We have veterans who want to come see these memorials, especially Eisenhower. I think for our military veterans, that's going to be a very popular spot. And you need places for these people to sit and reflect and rest.
And I think that's it for me. Becca, do you have any?
So the reason we are recording this and releasing this when we are is after all of this, you know, for 21 years of from Congress finalizing legislation to now, it was supposed to finally be dedicated May 8th, 2020, which is the 75th anniversary of victory in Europe. So they had finally timed this dedication to be done at a meaningful time, probably truly one of the last big World War II commemorations we would have in Washington, D.C. We're losing so much of that generation. We no longer have World War II veterans serving in Congress the way we did when this legislation was being passed. So the National Park Service, the Commission, Congress, everybody had really built up for this really meaningful dedication service. They were going to have a lot of important people speak, like Colin Powell, and have former Senator Pat Roberts was going to be there. So they had kind of built this up. And then with coronavirus, with the closures, of course, this had to be postponed. They have pushed to September, September 17th is going to be the dedication. So September 17th, that's going to be an excellent day. At first, when we were like talking about the new dedication date, we were like September. And then I was like, duh, that's Constitution Day. That's the anniversary of the signing of the Constitution, and Eisenhower signed into law the legislation creating Constitution Week. So unfortunately, a lot of the World War II significant dates, I think they felt they couldn't be sure about some of these spring summer dates, so they went with September. So hopefully, all things going well, they'll be able to dedicate and open this memorial in September. So it's been a really long journey to get this memorial. I am more interested in seeing this than I am for a lot of new memorials because of all the back and forth, all of the drama. One of the groups that fought against this Eisenhower Memorial is also one of the groups that fought very hard to get the National World War I Memorial changed, and is partially the reason why that memorial was delayed for so long, which they finally just started construction on that before all of this began. So I'm really interested in what the final product is when you're trying to please everybody. I also do want to mention what the final dollar amount was. People always ask when we go visit different memorials, how much did it cost? How much did it cost then? What would it cost today? People are always really curious. And a lot of times I say, this was not your taxpayer money. A lot of the money that goes into these memorials is privately funded. That is not the case for Eisenhower. So Eisenhower, $115 million. That's almost twice what they thought it was going to cost when they did this legislation in 1999. Only $15 million of that is private donations. $100 million, the most money the federal government has ever paid, put in for a memorial. No other memorial has gotten that kind of government funding. So this really
never will.
And probably never will. I can't imagine in 2020 or 2025, Congress saying, okay, oh, we're going to allocate $100 million for a memorial. We just don't do that with our budgets anymore. So because so much of your money, our money, the taxpayers' money went into this, I'm really, really interested to see what it's like. And there are some memorials that I didn't like before becoming a tour guide that I like better now with visitors, because you know, you can be Frank Gehry, you can be the granddaughter of Dwight D. Eisenhower, and you're going to have your opinions, but the everyday visitor is going to bring something different to this memorial. And sometimes visitors bring whole perspectives to it that no one thought of before. So I'm reserving judgment on what I think till I see it, and I see it with guests, but hoo boy, I can't imagine we may ever get another memorial after this.
And I think that's an excellent point, Becca, because I distinctly hated the World War II memorial. And I think one of the things that really changed my mind was seeing it with World War II veterans and seeing those honor flights come in and seeing their jaws drop and their tears align up. And I think that really sort of affected me and how I view it today. And actually, I really like it today. I think it's still a little stark, In the daylight. I think it does work a little bit better at night, but it's not the like, oh, and you have to see it at night. It still is pretty impressive during the day.
Imagine though, when the World War II Memorial was dedicated, they thought truly they were just a couple years away from having an Eisenhower Memorial to go with it.
Oh, yeah.
Here we are 15 years later.
For our patrons who are watching us record this, thank you. Thank you for your watching. Thank you for your support. So for everyone else, please don't forget that we're tour guides. I mean, how could you forget? But if you happen to come to Washington, D.C. and want to see the Eisenhower Memorial if it opens, or any other memorials in person, let us know.
We're so much better in person.
But this is excellent, Dan.
I know. But that's what I'm saying. We're super good here. Imagine what we're like in person.
Love it. Perfect. So there are a lot of ways that you can support us. You can give us 5 stars on any of the podcast sites, or, you know, all of them. Follow us on Twitter @TourGuideTell, and of course, become a patron. All month long, we're going to keep talking about World War II sites. So if that is something you're interested in, stay tuned for future episodes. Next one up next Friday. And if you don't know when Friday is, subscribe to our podcast and it will magically appear on your device. So thanks for listening.